Wow. What great poetry tonight. My God. Jeez, really puts the pressure on, doesn't it? And nice personal connections. It's so nice to read with friends. I've known Nancy for so long, and Jim, I wouldn't be here without him because he chose my first book. And I'm never going to let him forget that. He wants me to stop saying that, I'm sure, but I'm never going to let him. As you all know, of course, this is Veterans Day, and my father passed away on Veterans Day, so I'm going to read a couple poems for him, one older and one newer. The first one is a prose piece, and it's from a long piece called The Used Car Lot. It was a used car salesman, but I'm just going to read one piece from that, called The Last of the Hippies. Jesse, the body man, a pimp on the side, makes the cars hum in the greasy garage, windowless, tires stacked to the tilting point, country music blasting from the transistor, the toilet backed up, Playboy centerfolds shaping the dust, tools haphazard on the cracked cement floor. Get you any woman you want, he says, but 17, I sneak phone calls to my girlfriend, or lie on the black vinyl couch reading the Brothers Karamazov, my father shuffling through car titles on his desk. Go watch Jesse, he'd say. You might learn something. Having business at the bank, he puts me in charge, shows me a list with two columns scrawled in pencil, one marked preferred price, and the other lowest will go. Back in a few minutes, he says, and no sooner he's out the door. Pauses. If you get any customers, try to hold them there until I get back. Stall them. Show them around. Start a few cars. Humid afternoon. Air all haze. Trash stench from the next door's McDonald's. Euclid Avenue screaming. One way downtown. One way the suburbs. My spirit sweating to escape. And Fedor Karamazov murdered. Just as my customer arrives. All muscle and mirror sunglasses. I want that Ford in the back. My father told me stories about criminals on the lam who would need cars in a hurry. He didn't mind, though. They always pay up front. Cash. As usual, this junker needs a charge-up. The man twitches. Jesse wheels the gigantic battery charger over, cracks the hood, tightens the wires. It juices right up, and I feel the damp of hundreds and fifties. The customer peels out like a drag racer. My first sale. This long-haired, distracted son, my father calls the last of the hippies, is worthy, and the old man will be proud, and he is. He comes back, he pats me on the back, offers me a cigar, claims that a puff of smoke, I'll inherit the business yet, demonstrates the most important sales tactic. If a customer looks at a car, don't approach immediately. If he bickers with the price, look him in the eyes and walk away, just walk away. Straightening himself by way of demonstration, as my customer returns, steaming is the hot sidewalk, blood-faced, pounding his fist on the desk, demanding back his money. He turned the engine, and guess what? It didn't restart. What do you know? My father doesn't look up, cocksure. Sorry, son, we sell our cars as is. I bury my nose deep into the ravings of Ivan Karamazov to the Grand Inquisitor. This box here, my father mutters, staring at the form a second too long. Well, I see it isn't checked. He points at me. He sold you the car, didn't he? Well, look at him. Both glare at me as they would a disobedient dog. He doesn't know nothing. Later, at home, over dinner, my father snips sharply. How can you be such a mishugana? What do you want to be, anyway? Oh, I blurt out, a writer and a teacher. Oh, I'm glad, he fires back, biting down on his steak, as if it was the word and not the piece of meat he was ferociously chewing. You didn't say poet. I am, too. Hey, how you guys doing? Former students, and they can't even get extra credit anymore, and they're here. Good to see you. All right, here's the newer one. I turned 60 last week, so. And my dad has his, I have his, well, this poem is, it's just my, on my 60th birthday, I rose in the still dark and cold and put on my father's army coat, hanging in the closet for years, from the last great war, he'd say, the only war worthy of the fight. I turned toward the moon-drenched field, the pond, warming my hands in the pockets, wanting not the emptiness I knew, but something I missed, a scrap of paper scripted in his familiar hand that would reveal the secret and simple sentence scrawled in the glory of his youth. Wise words only a combat would reveal that could teach me how to encounter the last phase of my life. When he was my age, he had 7 years left. They weren't lucky. Bad heart, aggravation at work. True to his generation, he wasn't eloquent, only that he was a sergeant and he lost his two front teeth. Daddy, what I still called you in those distant years when we were adults together. Here you are again. Full moon mirrored in the water, keeping me warm. Thank you. I'm just going to read one more poem right now for my dad, because why not? Okay, it's called Our Royalty, and has an epigram by Martin Buber from the Tales of Chassidism, whatever. The greatest evil is when you forget that you are the son of a king. Yet, aren't I the son of Joe Terman, used car salesman? And wasn't he the son of Abraham Terman, carpenter, until injured by a salami truck? Or was it a cable car on Cedar Hill in Cleveland Heights, Ohio? And wasn't he the son of whom? And how far back Do we search for our royalty? Because my father was not robed, but robbed, and shot in the lower intestine, and pistol whipped. And if you were a king, would he have lain on the couch all day after they raised the rent and wept? And if he were a king, would he have taken that suited stranger's advice and got himself some advertising? Get yourself some advertising, he told my father. Ain't no one here going to know you're here. I'll think about it, my father replied, and showed him the door. Joe Terman, if you weren't a king, perhaps you were one of those 36 wise peasants, concealing beneath your sweater and plaid pants your esoterica. Perhaps, between customers, you were studying Kabbalah and the Zohar in secret. Did you, in the bathroom where the body man stored his playboys, don your tefillin and your yarmulke and sway with the psalms? In your filing cabinets, where the titles of cars were kept, just there, did you house your Talmud? Now that your life has completed itself, Joe Terman, measured its time and distance, sung its chapter and verse, and we could look up every moment of those 67 years, will we uncover your scepter and crown, examining in the minutest detail your errors and triumphs, will the ornaments of your authority be revealed? Thank you. Thanks. Bob mentioned that I had some poems translated in Arabic, and it was by someone who became a very good friend of mine. Did I get the right one? Uh-oh. I hope this is the right poem. Okay. Did I take the wrong one? I took the wrong one. How about that? Well, he is... Selah Arousek is a someone who lives in Aleppo. And we had worked out that he was going to translate some Syrian poets, contemporary poets, into English, and I would kind of help him with the English. And I thought I brought the right journal, but I didn't, to read one of those poems. So we'll just have to slide by. But anyway, they're really great poems, and we got a lot of them published in Crazy Horse and Poetry International and Poetry London. And it's a really cool thing. There's some amazing Syrian poets, and Selah is doing some wonderful work. But I'll just move on and read another poem, which is connected with a couple of us here. I know that back in 2002, Jim and some other folks were at a protest against the Gulf War. I remember because you had a beard. I remember that very clearly. So, and Jesse will remember this poem too. So I want to go back and read it. It's sort of like written around that time, but I think it's relevant too. It's in two parts, two poems against the Second Gulf War. The first is called The Die-In. Remember The Die-In? We had the anti-war protest, Pittsburgh, February 2003. We couldn't stop the snow from falling with its substantial flakes as if the sky had volumes to speak against this madness. We couldn't stop the dusk from filtering through gray clouds. We couldn't persuade the mounted police to take our flask of tea and sing Kumbaya. We couldn't lift the 50 or so souls from the small space on the street, Fifth Avenue, closed off, sealed in their homespun grave. We couldn't not listen to their sprawled bodies, their silence that sang, stare at us, change your lives. The second part is first day of spring in the Second Gulf War. As the birds were singing, the bombs were dropping. You could hear birds singing before and after the bombs dropping, not during. You could hear the bombs dropping in between the singing birds, and you knew the bombs were dropping and the birds were singing at the same time, but you couldn't hear them both at once. They told you what kinds of bombs were dropping, but they didn't tell you what kinds of birds were singing. It was dawn in the ancient land, and then there were birds, and then there were bombs, and then there were birds again. All right. Thanks. A couple more. I'll just do a couple more here. I'll do my bring my mother into the. She'd be mad if I didn't invite her in. So, my mother argues with Ecclesiastes. She would argue with Ecclesiastes. At the Wailing Wall, when she danced with the dancers. That was her time, that was her place. She ate and drank and enjoyed all the good of her labor. And now, her body struggling, each breath under the purple comforter, her right hand holding the white sheet, her mouth slightly open, her pale cheeks sunken, her pink gown open at the breasts, her eyes, delicate as moth wings, closed, this almost death mask, these last living moments. Is it true, as it comes to pass, that all, as it says, is emptiness, these words, this effort, loving all, trusting few, always having something in reserve? If she had one, she needed two, she'd say. If she had two, she needed three. The way she wouldn't trust the banks, a little of her fortune in each, or her sons, a little of her wisdom for each, not all for one, not the whole in one heart, in case it breaks, and you're left, she would say, with nothing. And here I am, a good son, trying to be, at her bedside, reading to her through her Alzheimer's and her stone deafness and her dying. From Ecclesiastes, who she interrupts with her characteristic chutzpah. No, you schlemiel, she shouts. The day of death is not better than the day of birth. Are you a meshugana? She continues, embarrassing me in front of this wise preacher. The house of mourning is not greater than the house of feasting. Have you ever had children? Have you ever had the Blinses at Corky's and Lenny's? Have you ever heard Jerry Vale's O Sole Mio? Have you ever drunk four cups of wine on Passover? Eat, drink, and be merry. Now, there we can agree. Yet, with this breath that came to my bones in her womb, I continue to read to her. Sorrow is better than laughter. And I know she's ready to sue him. She is asking for his name and number. In this, the beginning of her ending, under the purple comforter. One generation passeth away, I continue. There is no remembrance of former things, neither shall there be any remembrance of things to come. And my mother rises again to kvetch. Is this man a putz? Is he blind? Is he not pointing to me, my afterlife? Her breath is slowing now, the nurse applying delicately the morphine. Yet she continues, can't you see the bone of my bone, the flesh of my flesh? And so will I, in fact, carry her with me all the days of my life. And what will she carry, empty of her body, the air her sanctuary? Afternoons we would nap together, the shade drawn against the sharp light, and we'd play the game of who falls asleep first, her assuring breath, inhaling time, exhaling chance, under the purple comforter, arguing with Ecclesiastes from beginning to end. Thank you. Again, thanks, Bob, and this wonderful poets. Wow. What a great time. And all our friends here. It's nice to see you again. Okay, this is my other last one. My Russian Jewish grandparents and the birth parents of our Chinese child meet at a cafe and discuss our child's future. My longest title. Shmuel and Malka and our child's Chinese birth parents are sipping tea at a cafe somewhere between the pale settlement of Russia and central rural China. They speak in signs and gestures, swirling arms like dancers, shaping fingers into figures, standing up and swaying, contorting bodies to emphasize some obscure point, even employing pauses and long silences to further the conversation. The men gesture. My grandfather's yarmulke is as black as I imagine our child's birth father's hair. The women continue to fill their husbands' cups and stare off into the distance. The men agree on the major issue. Each will have to sacrifice their darlings, their children, send them away across miles of land and ocean into a realm further and more unfamiliar than they could understand, even in their own tongue, a place perhaps like those far away and never, never lands in the stories of each of their childhoods. Palace on a cloud, temple beyond the stars, Jerusalem or Shangri-La. It's better to think of that strange country this way than to ponder the potential dangers, strangers in strange lands, years of forced labor, the poverty and destitution they themselves know something about, each in their own way, these farmers and peddlers, each of them know dark to dark. Their gestures are more subtle and sophisticated now. They even forget and sometimes break out into their Yiddish and Mandarin, which sounds as exotic as a gathering of multicolored birds singing through the tea's steam. The bill, which is grief, arrives. They agree to split it. They accompany each other to the gate that opens out into their separate centuries. Through unfathomable signs, they gesture to meet again. Thank you.